cut to the chase, okay? What are you guys selling?
You're drowning and I throw you a life jacket. Would you grab it? Yes, good. Pick up 200 shares. I won't let you down.
Pay him. Pay that man his money.
Ask them how they'd like to see 30, 40% returns. What are they going to say? No? I don't want to see those returns.
Where's the money, Lebowski?
You're going to make a lot of money, right?
Be aggressive. Learn how to push.
Show him a 3% return, and I'll trust you to watch his kids for the weekend.
I'm a big fan of money.
Move around. Motion creates emotion.
I did not know this.
That's it. I'm done.
All right, welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. This is Matt Weber hosting today. That's right. This isn't the Chief's voice, you know, 40 years ago. Okay, that's a little too much. 30 years ago. This is Matty Weber. You're going to hear a lot of me for the next 2 hours. And then we have our regularly scheduled Monday programming joining me. So we'll have Frank Fahey leading off, and then we'll have John Flanagan coming up at 6:35 Central Time. And then we'll close it out talking markets with Mike Hart of Tasty Trade, as we do every Monday. So certainly looking forward to that as we take a quick look at the markets. Skyrocketing this morning. Dow futures are up 384. That's 1.31%. S&P futures up 33.5. That's almost a percent. NASDAQ futures are up 52. So, Frank, first question this morning. First of all, good morning. How are you?
Good morning.
Why are the markets up? What's going on? Did I miss something? I see Moderna says preliminary trial data show that its coronavirus vaccine is more than 94% effective. Is it a race between the vaccine companies?
I think it's a race to yes, and it's added good news. I think people are optimistic that the cure is going to take place, and we're going to have a return to normal. And, of course, normal's only a setting on a dryer, but that there will be an abatement of the disease. Now, we aren't seeing that right now, the abatement. But, and this has been going on for about a week since the announcement. Last week, the small caps, the Russell 2000, were up over 6%. And that's a pretty good indicator of an economy-wide uptick. So, yeah, I'd say enthusiasm, other events, a new president, I think we can underestimate the impact of.
Well, I definitely want to ask you about that shortly. The creator of the Pfizer-BioNTech vaccine says life could return to normal by next winter. So with positive news pertaining to vaccines, yet cases surging everywhere, you know, over 60,000 are currently hospitalized. I know that a lot of the contributors on this show, in my opinion, downplay the virus a little bit. And then we have certain people that act like it's the bubonic plague, and I'm not in that camp either. I'm not really sure what camp I'm in. I try to follow the rules and be as responsible as I can, but I don't necessarily agree with shutting everything down. Yet, if we truly do have a vaccine coming as soon as, you know, this coming spring or at the latest this coming fall, where you can distribute it, you know, to the point where it's going to make a big impact, Is the right move then just to continue sort of shutting everything down until then, and knowing that you're going to kill a lot of business, but knowing that a vaccine is coming, and if you can sort of provide people the aid they need to survive for six more months, then maybe it's all worth it? Or, you know, what are your thoughts on that?
I think it comes down to how do we protect the healthcare system and the healthcare providers, because they seem to be swamped right now. And the message seems to be their burnout. I got a call from a cousin on Friday saying, whatever you do, do not get this disease.
Because he or she
not as mild as people are putting it out to be. I am seeing, I've talked about South Bend before, I have family in northern Indiana and southern Michigan that are getting the disease. So it's gone outside, quote unquote, what we think are high risk populations. A common question I get from the people who think it's not a big deal is they go, how many people do you know that have gotten really sick from COVID? Well, I know a number right now who are not brown people. And, you know, they seem to think it's somebody else that's going to get it.
Right, that's the common theme is that, you know, hey, the healthcare system, the hospital workers have gotten so good at treating this that, you know, yeah, if you get it, it's bad. It's really bad if you're older, but if you're, you know, under 60, under 65, under 70, and you can sort of catch it and get to the hospital soon enough, then if necessary, then you'll probably be fine. But we're seeing that that's not the case for everyone. My personal, anecdotal experience with it is no one is getting sick. You know, people are getting it and either it's very mild symptoms to the point where they don't even know they had it, or, you know, they feel like they had a cold or a flu for a few days and then they're fine. That said, you know, I talked to my mother, yesterday or Saturday over the weekend, and essentially my family's canceling Thanksgiving for the first time in my lifetime. Not only my immediate family, like my mom and my stepdad and going there, but even my grandma, the bigger Thanksgiving with all my aunts and uncles that we've done every year for my whole life and certainly before that. And my mom is like, listen, I had an acquaintance that just died, and she was 50, and in perfect health as far as she knew, and she died from it. So there are, as it continues to spread and continues to surge in a lot of states, people are actually having it hit closer to home than I think we did before. I haven't had it hit close to home to me yet. I only know of really one or two people that have actually gotten it. And none of them had, you know, serious symptoms or anything. But I do think for whatever reason, I don't know if it's just human nature, people need that close impact before they actually will look at something.
I've anecdotally, and boy, I get to go anecdotally. This is fun. Growing up in South Bend, I went to a multicultural school, you know, Catholics, Protestants, blacks, Jews. And it's really hit the black athletes of my youth, and that's who I'm more aware of and remained in contact with. And the number of obituaries I've seen on Facebook on class pages or pages for ranges of classes is mind-boggling. It's pretty profound what's happening out there.
Yeah, and I could see that, and I certainly, there's probably a lot of people that are dealing with that. But then it also, you know, then you look at it from the other side, and you look at the businesses that are affected by this and that are not getting any sort of government aid after the initial, you know, PPP stuff that came out, back in May or June. And are closing left and right. Businesses that have been around for 50 years, 100 years even in Chicago. Chicago is just a complete ghost town. And now you're seeing suburban bars and restaurants that are just saying, hey, we're ignoring this order. We understand that it's an advisory, but we're not closing because if we do, we're going out of business. And this is our family business. This is our livelihood. And I sympathize with that side too. I guess.
Well, I don't. I understand that, and fine, they'll do it. But I will not go to those places. And my biggest problem is: am I put in contact with people that do go to those places? The mini outbreak in my family was some people that went bowling this past Saturday. Oh, come on!
Yeah, I know.
I mean.
Well, that's
and they'll act like they're quarantining, but no, but I did go bowling.
Yeah, that's
I know people going to casinos. Come on.
That was sort of the conversation I had with my mom, which was, you know, and my mom's a business owner and they've been open through all of this. You know, certainly precautious, masks, you know, social distancing, everything that you're supposed to do, but they've remained open and you know, she has basically said, you know, I think people should have the right to choose as business owners if they're going to stay open or not, and I think people should have the right to choose if they're going to attend events or stay in. But when you have a society that half of us can completely operate remotely and via technology that exists now that didn't exist, you know, the last, you know, pandemic that happened 100 years ago on this scale. And then the other half, have to actually be out there and risking themselves and the health of their families and friends and bringing it home as we read about every day, because we still need, you know, food. We still need, you know, garbage picked up. We still need police. We still need firemen. We still need, you know, delivery folks. I guess we think we still need delivery folks. And so then it becomes a class warfare situation where half of us are, you know, fortunate enough that, like me, I can work from home every single day. I don't need to leave the house ever if I don't want to. Versus the other half, like my brother, who can't make a dime unless he's actually in the thick of it working because he's in the restaurant business. And, you know, it's like our safety matters and their safety doesn't matter. And I understand that piece too. And without some sort of long-standing assistance or plan to say, okay, we're going to take care of those people for 6 months because a vaccine's coming in 6 months. The rest of you continue to work from home. If without a plan like that, I don't understand. I don't see how we can continue shutting them down and hurting them just to save the white collar elite. I mean, what do you think on that?
Well, we don't have a coherent plan. I mean, it came up this weekend that the president had not been to a COVID group meeting in 5 months. There's a complete shortage of leadership here. I think they're hoping that some sort of leadership will come with Biden. But there's not when I say coherent, I mean a national plan. You can't do it piecemeal. I mean, the virus does not respect political or geographic boundaries. We need an all-inclusive plan. What that is right now is I don't know because it isn't being discussed. I have ideas, but, you know, darn, everybody should wear a mask. What's the big deal? If you're in public, wear a mask.
Well, you know, I mean,
it comes. I mean, you may have beliefs on that, but, you know, when every doctor I talk to says wear a mask, except people with a political axe to grind, then I'm thinking, yeah, wear a mask.
I'm in my city bubble, and everyone does wear a mask. So to me, that's not even an issue. Is that an issue out in the burbs?
But not so bad here, but Susan and I went down to Indiana a couple weeks ago and stopped in Merrillville, and we thought, okay, Cracker Barrel says they're doing social distancing. We took one step into that restaurant in Merrillville, and it was like going into the Star Wars bar. And it was that way in the parking lot.
Yeah.
And it was like, holy cow. And, of course, Susan turned on somebody that not wearing a mask, you know, who's 2 feet from her. And the guy goes, I do have a mask on. It was around his chin, and it was, I saw this going bad quickly.
Yeah, at that point, you get the hell out of there. So let me ask you this. You brought up an interesting point, and I think it's a good one, but I honestly, you know, and I don't necessarily expect you to have an answer, but how can, whether it was Trump over the last year who didn't seem to take this very seriously, which, you know, that a lot of people don't, and with the survival rate as high as it is, I can see that argument. Even though I don't agree with it, I can see it. And then with Biden coming in 2 months, he'll have his hands full. How can you possibly, just logistically, how can you set up and deliver a national plan when you have half the country that hates you, no matter what side you're on, and you have half of the governors who disagree with what you're doing and have their own sort of level of power? I mean, is there a way to actually deliver a national plan, even though I think we both agree that that's the best course here for at least the next 6 to 9 months until we, you know, have a vaccine?
I think there is a way to deliver it. The Army's the logistics. I mean, if anything, it's the Army knows how to get large quantities of people and product to different places. And we should be working on that now. This is part of the transition where Biden's team and Trump's team, whoever the team is, should be working together. And it would seem to be an opportunity for Pence to say, well, screw it. I'm going to work with these people for the good of the country. Not, hey, we aren't going to send anything to New York because Cuomo upset me.
Well, we're in agreement on that. Kevin writes in, everyone wears masks in public places where I live, Southwest Michigan and Northern Indiana. I do, and that's been my experience too. When I've been in, you know, I haven't traveled much during the pandemic, as I'm sure most people, you know, haven't, but I've been in Iowa, I've been in Wisconsin, I've been in Michigan, I've been in Indiana. And I think that's probably it. And everywhere I've gone, except for a couple of places in Michigan, a couple rural places in Michigan where I had to pop into a gas station or something, everywhere I've gone, you know, in public places, people throw the mask on and it's no big deal. You're in and out of the store, whatever you're doing. You throw it on. You go into the restaurant. You throw it on while you walk in. You sit down at the table. You know, you place your order. You take it off. It's not that big of a deal. So I tend to agree with Kevin. I think most people have been following that very simple rule. Now, is it 100% effective? No, nothing is. No one's saying that. But if it is 70% effective or 90% effective, and it's a minor inconvenience for a period of time, to me, that doesn't seem like that big of a deal. He also writes in, which I also agree with, and it leads us into our next sort of topic here that we'll talk with Frank with, and we'll certainly talk with John Flanagan with, saying, you know, Biden touted his plan throughout the campaign. It turns out his plan was to create a committee that will create a plan, which is funny, and I do agree with that. That does seem to be the government mantra. Let's create a committee to create a committee.
Oh, no question about it.
And then we'll create a plan. But I am not going to turn on Biden just yet. I'm not a Biden fan personally. I voted for him, full disclosure, because I wanted Trump out of there, but I do not consider myself a Democrat at all. And I certainly am not a Republican. I'm a proud independent. Most of the people on the show know that I supported Bernie, the last two elections. I despised Hillary, and I don't despise Biden. I don't find anything to dislike about him necessarily, but I don't love him by any means. But I do, for the sake of the country, as an American, just as I hoped President Trump would do a good job, and in my opinion, he didn't. But I do hope he does well, and I do hope that this committee and this early stages of his presidency do allow him to sort of put together a plan that can get us through this. And so hopefully a year from now, we're looking back at this and saying, you know, hey, we did a lot of things wrong, but we sort of got it right at the end, and let's move forward. I mean, why don't people share that mindset, Frank?
Selfishness. It's all about me. And when I was growing up, I was taught that in school that the reason Americans were so good at what they did and were so successful was that we had mastered delayed gratification. Well, that's gone. We've moved on to I want it, and I want it now. So, and which, you know, I'm a participant. I want the vaccination, and I want it now. I'll take it. But I've talked to some contributors here who said, "Oh, I'm not going to do it."
Well, so I can tell you.
I'd be interested in what our contributors say about doing the vaccination, because if it's the golden bullet, let's see if they're going to play the game.
Well, I'll ask everyone today. So you say you will take it. I'll be honest. In fact, people were starting to tweet in, which is great. You can follow us on Twitter at Stocks, the letter N Jocks. With Chief out today and me on my own, I'll be as collaborative and as interactive as possible. So tweet us in throughout the show. Help us get through the 2 hours. I'm certainly not a markets expert, so we'll be talking a little bit more about news of the day and sports and politics and stuff like that. Until Mike Hart gets on at 7:30 and we can talk markets. And Frank, if you have a market thought or two before we wrap up, you can certainly share that. But I will ask everyone if they're going to take the vaccine. I'll be honest, Frank, I have honestly never taken a flu shot in my life, and I'm 37. I mean, maybe when I was a little kid I did, but as an adult, I've never taken a flu shot. I've also never had the flu. I don't know if that's coincidence or if it's, you know, cause and effect. I don't know. That said, if after, you know, 6-8 months or whatever of hopeful positive results from this vaccine, after it goes through, you know, the medical workers and the essential folks that I assume will get access to it first, and then high risk people, by the time it trickles down to me, let's call it, you know, a year from now, next fall, if the signs are pointing to it being a successful thing, I will absolutely take it to do my part in the country, even though I don't typically feel strongly about taking vaccinations for flu and cold and COVID concerns. I hope everyone will do that.
Well, my wife works high risk for a DMV, which in Illinois just closed down for the next 3 weeks. And I'm in a high risk population. And I'm lucky I don't have, it appears that diabetes may be one of the biggest risk factors. And
oh, really?
There's no history in my family of that.
Well, that's good.
So,
Joe writes in, we don't live in a political system that lends itself to a national plan, which, you know, I tend to agree with that. Even though I'd like to see it happen, I just don't think that, certainly today's landscape, maybe at any time, that, you know, a sort of a national, outside of like, you know, going to war after we've been attacked. You know, 9/11 comes to mind, even though I was against it at the time. I was young, but I was still against it. I was 18. Everyone sort of came together, got behind President Bush. We went to Iraq. There was very few, you know, dissenting votes. And we sort of came together because we were attacked and we were told that, you know, these guys were a part of it. These guys had weapons of mass destruction, whatever. It was all, you know, BS as we know now. But we got together and nationally, and we, and you know, you would think that a pandemic that
we
is,
do that for air traffic control. Come on, this country gets together on many things.
Well,
we get together on the funding of the national interstate system. I mean, I disagree.
Well,
this country doesn't get together unless there's some economic benefit. Perhaps, maybe that's it, but no, we get together all the time and accept it.
So why don't you think, you know, like I said, so 9/11 was my example, where we were attacked as a country, and it hit home hard, harder than probably anything since Pearl Harbor, and because it was in New York City, and it was our skyscrapers, and it wasn't a, you know, an army base, or a Navy base, why, you know, we came together, and we took it personally, and we said, you know, we want vengeance. Why that a disease coming and attacking us as a country that does not see political lines, that does not see state lines, that does not discriminate by age, race, creed, sex, gender, anything, why can't we come together on fighting this? Is it strictly the economics of it, or is it just my team believes this and your team believes that, so screw you, I'd rather die? Like, I don't get it.
Well, I think a lot of it is who the susceptible groups have been. And as you said, the one percenters aren't getting it to speak up. We'll see what happens in this current uptick. But, yeah, I mean, for example, people seem to think, well, it's mutated to be less virulent or, you know, less deadly. I don't know that. Why can't it go the other way?
Well, so, you know, like I said, I tend to have been all along, I think, in the middle on this, where I don't think it's as bad as some people think it is, where they're locked in and they haven't left their house in 9 months and haven't done anything. But I also don't think it's, you know, something that should be ignored, where you say, you know, masks are useless and blah, 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 we should, you know, fully reopen, and who cares? If they die, they die. You know, it's part of life. I don't agree with that group either. But
wear a mask, wash your hands, social distance. It's not that big a deal.
That's my greater point. But you can see the divide that's there when you have the elite, if you will, and I'll even put myself in that category, even though I'm certainly not a one percenter. But the folks that can get out of bed, flip on their laptop, connect via VPN into their office, work all day, you know, make the same amount of money that they were making before, shut their laptop at 5 o'clock, order in, right? Meanwhile, you're ordering from Amazon all day to do your shopping, whatever, because you're not going to stores. And you're like, you know, this is a minor inconvenience because I can't go to brunch on Sundays, but, you know, my life hasn't really changed, and I get 2 hours back in my day because I'm not commuting anymore. This isn't so bad. I could see why it's easy for them, me, to tell other people that, hey, suck it up, stay home, and we'll get through this, while others are like, hey, I own a business, I have to be outside, or hey, I work in the restaurant business, I work in the bar business, I work in the delivery business, I work in the supply chain, you know, factories, whatever, and I have to be out there, screw you that you get to tell me what to do, blah, blah, blah. Like, I get that, and I do think it's important that...
Oh, I definitely get it.
I know you get it, and I know people on this show get it, but I think a lot of people in my circle that I would call more liberal, elitist-type folks, who I tend to agree with in a lot of ways, you know, regarding policy and social policy, I don't think they do get it. And that's very frustrating, and I think that thinking creates the divide just as much as the crazies on the other side that act like it's a hoax and it's no big deal and it's, you know, comes from the deep state. I think both sides are very equally to blame.
Oh, I agree with you there. Well, if it doesn't affect them, it doesn't exist.
That sums it up.
I mean, if you have a, you know, three square meals a day and your kids do, you really are just totally oblivious to going to bed hungry.
Yeah. I mean, that, I think that sums it up, Frank. So we only have a minute left with you. Two quick questions. One, do you think Trump is ever going to concede?
Oh, no, he won't concede. I think he'll leave.
So what happens? Like someone, like the Secret Service kicks him out, or what happens?
No, he'll just leave. He'll just never say the words, "I concede."
Okay.
That's he'll rail against, you know, the impending darkness.
and final question, if you can give us a quick 30 seconds, you know, summation of what you're seeing in the markets, that would be very helpful, because I certainly can't speak to that.
Now, there's enthusiasm right now, and we're seeing places like the Russell and the Nasdaq's come back, too. This is, the big boys appear to be doing some rotation, getting rid of the big winners and buying some of the losers they think will show value as the economy itself comes back. So I'm a range trader, so I'll say I don't know which direction it's going in, but I look for a direction. And right now the trend is up, and I would always protect myself to the upside. So I would never get hurt to the upside. But I am always wary to the downside. But I think we're going to keep on going up until something, we have a volatility event that is overwhelming. And we're still in the middle of earnings. So we have Walmart, we have Kohl's, we have Home Depot this week, earnings on Wednesday. It'll be interesting to see what happens there. So,
absolutely.
You know, I expect the market to go up, but I wouldn't trade it that big. I'd just protect myself.
Well, thanks, Frank. This was a lot of fun. I appreciate it.
Yep.
Thanks for calling in. By the way, you can follow Frank at FJ Fahey on Twitter, so give him a follow. And we should do this again soon.
I would like that.
All right, man. Have a
good
one.
See you, Matt.
All right. That was Frank Fahey. We're going to take a quick break. We'll do sports weather traffic, which I will also do. And then we'll welcome on John Flanagan. I look forward to talking with him about some of the things Frank and I talked about and some other stuff, too. And then to close the show, we'll have Mike Hart from Tasty Trade, who is a markets expert. He's also a Buffalo Bills fan. And if you watched the NFL, they lost on a Hail Mary yesterday. So hopefully Mike is up and at him this morning. Give us a follow on Twitter if you haven't already, at Stocks, the letter N, Jocks. Guys are tweeting in and gals are tweeting in all morning, which is great. I will read as many of those as possible on the air. And we'll keep it collaborative this morning. We'll be right back with John Flanagan.
How much confidence do you have that your investments will make you wealthy? Do you truly know the odds? Welcome to Luckbox, the control freak's guide to life, money, and probability. Luckbox shows you how to gauge the likelihood of success before you commit to an investment or any other decision. And Luckbox is free for 1 year at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Each new issue dives deep into the current investing climate, separates the signal from the noise with relevant trade ideas, and equips you with cutting-edge tactics you don't already know. Luckbox is the essential magazine for proactive investors who are hell-bent on pursuing life, luxury, and happiness through sports, fitness, travel, food, spirits, music, and a whole lot more. Smart investors don't bet on possibilities, they play the probabilities. Luckbox is $7.99 on newsstands, but you can subscribe for 10 free digital issues at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Don't rely on luck. Get Luckbox at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks.
This self-directed trading is a lonely job. Online trading is not as easy as point and click.
No, it's not. Everyone, even professionals, need to share ideas and think out loud every now and then.
That's what I like about PTI Pro Direct. Their staff of former option floor traders really helps me choose the right strategy for trading option volatility and plan the time decay for my covered writing program.
Yep, nothing can replace years of trading experience to stop you from making that dumb trade and for saving a few bucks. We've all been there and done that.
Yeah, I have access to all that great trading advice and experience for just a penny a share for stocks, $1 for equity options, and $1 minimum a trade.
Our clients at PTI Pro Direct can call when they need a little help on a trade or just to talk about the market in general. We trade every day. We love this stuff.
That's what I like most about PTI Pro Direct. Cheap prices along with great advice from real floor traders. It's the best of both worlds.
Tell your friends. That's PTIProDirect.com, PTIProDirect.com.
Hello, this is Tom Howe, the Chief. We've talked a lot on the show about risk and suitability, about how your portfolio should match your age, income, and risk appetite. It's been hard for investors to maintain that suitability in the last several years due to a Fed strategy that has driven interest rates to virtually zero. You may have even heard that the Fed was trying to drive conservative investors to a riskier portfolio on purpose, for whatever reason. I'm sure you're aware of investors that took some increased risk, such as longer-term fixed income securities, and are now unhappy with that choice. PTI, we've always stressed total portfolio risk awareness and tried to minimize chasing returns in a tough environment. Well, now it looks like maybe interest rates are moving more towards historical levels. Everyone needs to be aware of what that continued movement might do to your portfolio, both good and bad. We also have a stock market that seems to have stalled, at least for the short term. I think it's time for everyone to take a serious look at their goals, their risks, and their portfolios. Do they match? If not, we can help. We have a signature protected index program. We have ways to hedge against interest risk. We can make that portfolio right for you again. Go to PTISecurities.com or call us right now. The market can change very rapidly. That's PTISecurities.com.
Stocks, jocks,
stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
All right, welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. Maddie Weber here taking you through the next hour and a half until 8 a.m. Central Time. Chief is out today, so we're getting through it. First half hour with Frank went well. If you want to participate in the show, give us a tweet, at Stocks, the letter N, Jocks, on Twitter. You can follow us if you haven't already, and certainly tweet us. Dow futures are up 481 this morning. That's 1.64%. They are humming in the pre-markets. Same with the S&P, up 33.75. That's almost 1%. NASDAQ futures are down. They just flipped. They were up about 30 minutes ago when I last checked, so we'll have to ask our market guys why that happened. But the NASDAQ futures are now down 57.75, so we have a split futures market here. They're down down about a half a percent. Oil is up $1.48. That's 3.69%. As we look at some of the international markets, the DAX is up 174.94. That's 1.3%. And in Asia, the Nikkei is up 521 points. That's 2%. So all kinds of up markets for the most part, except for the NASDAQ. Oil, as I mentioned, is up $1.48. Brent is up $1.50. That's 3.5%. Natural gas is down 5%, 157. The markets, for the most part, are skyrocketing this morning, with NASDAQ and natural gas as the outlier. Let's take a look at sports, weather traffic. So I'll flip it over to myself. We're off to a good start on the area expressways, roadways, and tollways here in Chicago. Absolutely no delays on the Edens or Kennedy. Eisenhower, is looking good too. On the Stevenson, it looks like in the southwestern suburbs, we have a crash on the outbound side just before I-355. So that's causing a bit of delays. Lakeshore Drive to the Tri-State is up to 19 minutes on the outbound Stevenson. To I-355, it's 32 minutes. Three cars involved in this accident. So give yourself a little bit of extra time if you're heading out on I-55 to, to St. Louis. Where are you going this morning? Southside expressways are looking okay on the Ryan, I-57, and the Bishop Ford. Weather today, it's going to warm up a little bit from yesterday. We'll reach a partly cloudy high of 51, so that'll feel nice. But the wind is so blustery, as it has been all weekend. The windshields will feel much colder than that as it continues to be windy this morning. Right now it is clear and 33 degrees downtown. For our Phoenix listeners, a beautiful day down in Phoenix. Sunshine with a high of 89. Right now it's clear and 52. In sports, looking forward to the Bears hopefully getting back on track tonight. Monday Night Football, the Bears host the Vikings. The Bears are 5-4, Vikings are 3-5, but if you didn't know the records, you would think they'd be flipped. The Bears are playing really poorly right now, having lost three in a row. Vikings are playing much better, and their record does not indicate how well they're playing behind Dalvin Cook, the best running back in the NFL. Vikings are 3.5-point favorites. They were 3-point favorites. That went up a half a point as of yesterday, and we'll see where that lands. I wouldn't be surprised to see more money coming in on the Vikings. If that hits 4 or 4.5, that's when you maybe lay a bet down on the Bears if you think they can keep it close, because the Bears don't really get blown out very often. The Colts game is the one game I can think of off the top of my head where the Bears really got dominated. Other than that, they've either won or they've been very close, and had a chance to win, before, flubbing all over themselves. But Bears-Vikings tonight, The Arizona Cardinals, as I touched on briefly before the break, were in a great game with the Buffalo Bills, and it was a back-and-forth game, and then Josh Allen and the Bills scored a touchdown with 34 seconds left to take the lead. Looked like they were going to win the game. Cardinals drove it down just past midfield and then threw a Hail Mary up with 2 seconds left on the clock that was caught by DeAndre Hopkins amidst triple coverage. He brought it down. And unfortunately for Colin, who gave Cardinals as a play on Friday, and for me, who had a little bit of money on the Cardinals, -2.5, they did not kick the extra point. They took a knee, and because they didn't want to risk the extra point getting blocked and returned for 2 points, which would have tied the game, so they took a knee, and then they didn't cover the 2.5, so they won by 2. So Arizona beats Buffalo 32-30 on the Hail Mary. The Cardinals are 6-3, playing great football. Lastly, Sunday Night Football, the Patriots upset the Ravens 23-17 in a nasty, rainy, cold, windy game in Foxborough, Massachusetts last night. So the Pats are now 4-5, and they've won 2 in a row as they're kind of turning their season around after it looked like they were, had no chance of making the playoffs. Lastly, it was weird having the Masters on in mid-November, but a nice little treat to watch some golf. As I did on Thursday, I didn't get to see it much on Friday because I actually played golf. Didn't play very well. We went out to Cog Hill, me and my brother and a couple of buddies. And I shot a 98 at Cog Hill, course number 3. But I gave about 5 or 6 strokes back, were just terrible golf shots. I felt like I was playing at the level where I should have been in the low 90s, which is good for me. If I'm in the high 80s or low 90s, that's very good for me. But I gave a few shots back, shot a 98, which, I'm okay with. But didn't get to watch the Masters on Friday. Watched a little bit on Saturday, and then Sunday, I'm so just engulfed with NFL, I didn't see, but I was kind of following the leaderboard, and Dustin Johnson just appeared to dominate. So we'll ask some of our guys if they watched it. But Dustin Johnson wins, shooting a 20-under, breaking Tiger Woods' 18-under record from 1997. And I guess DJ was very emotional afterward, having won the Masters for the first time. Congratulations to him. Number one player in the world, yet he wasn't the odds favorite to win it going into the tournament. So if you put a bet on him, you're looking very good right now, because you probably got about 12-1 odds going into that tournament for the number one player in the world. That's not too bad. So with that, we'll welcome in John Flanagan, who joins us every Monday morning. And John, you've been contributing to the show for probably about a year now, if I had to guess, and I've been fortunate enough to meet you a couple times. And I just want to tell you, because Chief would never say it, but you have been just an absolutely valuable contributor to the show, and we look forward to having you on every Monday. So good morning, my friend. How are you?
Well, thank you, Matt, and congratulations on the great job today too.
Thanks. Well,
I wish I could clone you and put you on some other stations.
Yeah, I hear you, man. We're 40 minutes into it, so I don't want to count my chickens yet, as my grandma would say. Don't count your chickens. But thank you. I appreciate that. And, I know that you said you listened in to Frank and my conversation to kick off the show. And I would say, Frank's a little more left-leaning than some of our other contributors who are a little more right-leaning. And then we have some guys that I would consider, more in the middle. And I've always thought that's the best part about our show. Is that you have, I'll say with an exception of me, we have a lot of smart people that look at things, through different lenses based on, where they grew up, where they live now, their professional experience, their educational experience, so on and so forth, maybe their financial situation. And they look at the world differently, but are not stupid. They're smart, and they have their reasons for why they look at the world the way they do. And I've always found that fascinating about this show, that we can all sort of come together, and sometimes we agree on stuff, sometimes we don't, sometimes we can have a laugh and talk a little sports, but typically we will sort of settle on something that sort of makes sense for the listeners, where they can kind of hear all sides of an issue and kind of make their own decision. And I really like that about the show, and I think you offer a lot of that sort of expertise and mindset. So you have been pretty vocal and adamant about being against some of the mandated shutdowns and governmental I don't know what you would call it, I guess overbearing regulation over the last 6 to 9 months. And I tend to agree with you on that. What would you do right now when you see that the shutdowns haven't worked? Okay. And yet were surging and spiking all over the place, especially in places like the Dakotas and some of the other places that really didn't take any of this seriously as far as, you know, compared to some of the other states. I mean, is this just something that we just have to deal with? Or, you know, what would you do if you were getting, you know, sworn in on January 21st?
Well, I guess I don't think any kind of national mandate is possible or will be accepted because, just using Illinois as an example, I mean, Illinois' response over the last, you know, 8 months has been, I mean, it looks as if it's trying to be nuanced. So you've got the state divided up into geographic regions, and they're treated differently, and the data is crunched differently for those regions. I think it's been the presumption here, and I think an accurate one, that there's no way Illinoisans would sit for a mandate that applied statewide about pretty much anything,
right,
especially when it came to business shutdowns or social distancing or wearing masks in public or you name it. There would be an insistence that this be looked at in a way that treats different regions differently. And by the same token, I think you look across state boundaries and you get to a state like Wyoming or Colorado versus Illinois or any number of big territories that do not fit any kind of a neat template really about anything, about their climate or about their rainfall or about their population density or ethnicity or demographics generally. You're not going to find any way of making a national mandate about this stick. And I think, you know, what you said about Biden and his proposed task force, you know, to come up with something, I mean, we're looking perhaps at 2 or 3 years into a potential Biden administration, if that actually does happen, before anything really happens. And it won't be a kind of national policy that some people, I think, are hoping for. So I don't hold out much hope at all that there's a way of addressing this satisfactorily for the entire country without damaging, you know, further attempts to treat the disease. I think maybe it's just a case, as you suggested, that it's got to run its course, and the more cases, so-called, you know, positive test results, the better in the long run. And especially since, you know, like any virus, it evolves, it mutates. It's not the same thing necessarily that it was 8 months ago, and testing for it is giving you some kind of satisfaction, I guess, but if it's being used to wrap up, you know, fear that it can't be controlled, then I think we're attacking it in the wrong way. It has to run its course, and the more people who get it and develop something like herd immunity, and the sooner that happens, the better for everybody.
Well, I think you bring up a couple of good points and interesting points. Certainly, the United States is a unique scenario compared to other countries around the world. When you talk about just how big the U.S. is, with two coasts, with different climates, different populations, it really drives me nuts when people say, well, look at what New Zealand did, or look at what, you know, South Korea did. It's like, that is the most apples and oranges comparison you could ever make when you talk about how a small island in the Pacific handles a pandemic versus the United States. You just can't compare the two. So I tend to agree with you. Getting a state to agree on something is hard enough. There's no possible way, in my opinion, that we could get, you know, the national government and everyone that participates in that to agree. That said, I wonder, you know, what is the best course of action? Because, you know, people say you should wear masks. Okay, you know, I think it probably does help to a certain degree. I know it's not 100%, but I don't think anything is 100%. And for anyone to expect something to be 100%, I think is foolish. And I think everyone knows that. They just play dumb on that. But if it helps, you know, 70% or 75% or 80%, okay, that's an easy thing we can do to help slow it down. I don't agree with the shutdowns. I really don't. I think that we should be smart, wear masks, social distance when you can, but I think we have to let people make choices and let businesses make choices. So I don't agree with that. But that said, everything that the government has attempted to do, or in some cases the governments that have done nothing, either way, it hasn't worked. So part of me thinks, you know, like you said, we should just sort of let it play its course, and it's sad, but let's do our best to make sure that our healthcare workers have everything they need to treat people, and let's get people out of there. And then the other part of me thinks, you know, on the other shoulder, well, maybe we should just completely shut down until the vaccine's ready in 6 months, and, you know, it's going to be terrible for 6 months, but if the vaccine's ready and it works and people take it, then we'll be fine. like what would you do? Would you be, you know, sort of the former there, and let's just open up and wear masks and take our chances, or what do you think?
Let's open up. You know, the sooner and more completely, the better. Unfortunately, I mean, I'm bucking the trend, I fear, because I see people more amenable to a tighter lockdown now than they were 3 or 4 months ago, or maybe even 6 weeks ago.
But you can understand that logic, though.
When I look back on how the goalposts have shifted here since last March, when the only way they could make people swallow a lockdown for 30 days was, we'll wait until we can flatten the curve number-wise, and then everything will be okay. Well, this has been endlessly postponed with ever more dire predictions about not having locked down enough, and this is the price we pay for it. And I'm just over it. I don't think there's any way you stamp this thing out. First of all, I mean, that's not going to happen. And pretending that you can by locking things down farther and farther and putting people in the fear of conducting their normal lives until this changes is making people endlessly terrified of normal day-to-day activities. And that isn't a healthy thing by any stretch. It's not healthy from a physical health, let alone a mental health standpoint.
Agreed, but you say, you know, moving the goalposts, and in some ways I agree with you, and I think the government does that all the time, and, you know, I think a lot of people do that all the time. I have customers that do that all the time to me in my private business. I go, wait a minute, you asked for this, this, and this, and now none of that matters, and you need this, this, and this. You're changing the rules on me. But I will say, you know, agreed. Everyone said, hey, listen, this is bad. It's March. We don't exactly know how bad it is, but we think it's really bad. Let's lock down for, you know, as you put it, you know, 30 days, 60 days, whatever, and see if we can flatten the curve here because we're afraid we're going to overwhelm everyone. Okay, so we did that. And after a period of time, we did flatten the curve. And then we kind of reopened. And so I don't know if that's moving the goalposts. I mean, we reopened, and now we're in a threatening position from, by all accounts of everything I've read, that there's over 60-some thousand hospitalized right now across the country. I don't know how many hospital beds there are across the country, but it seems like that seems like a lot of hospitalizations. And so it's a matter of, okay, we need to flatten the curve again. That's how I would read that. Are you saying that's not the case?
Well, yeah, right. I'm saying that's not the case. And one of the things that I find lacking in any of this, the discussion when it comes to public health figures speaking on this issue is what's happened to the flu virus that is always it's a national subject every year, and the kind of flu vaccine that is being available, the advertising of the vaccine and the hospitalizations and the fatality rate from the flu. And now effectively, you know, we've been told, and it's not just, you know, Illinois or other U.S. states, but it's other countries saying that, well, we have no flu this year. Well, to me, that's just counterintuitive. Does this mean we've eradicated flu? No, I think it just means we're not thinking about flu as we used to, because now we have COVID to think about. And we've wrapped everything into a COVID envelope and treated it as some much more horrific disease than the flu maybe ever was, and yet I suspect it always was fatal in certain cases, and certainly threatening to certain slices of the population. There's nothing newsworthy about that. This year we've decided to discount every flu case, although I'm sure there's flu around, there always is, and we've decided to treat it in a way that mandates, you know, draconian measures against conducting businesses, schools, normal life generally. And we've never done that before for the flu, and I think now we're calling it something else, but to me it's the same thing all over again, and we have no reason to be panicking the way we are. So I suspect I'm a voice crying in the wilderness about a lot of this, but I don't get it. And if there were some way of tracking flu cases versus COVID, then I wouldn't maybe be so, you know, convinced about this. But we're being told there are no flu cases, and that to me is total nonsense. It has to be nonsense. How could that be true this year and it's never been true before?
Yeah, there's a lot of stuff that doesn't add up in the numbers. And, you know, Chief always mentions, and I know some of the other contributors on the show talk about the incentive that and who the hell knows who came up with this, but the bonus that hospitals get with a COVID classification versus something else. I don't know the truth of that. I assume it's true, you know, based on what I've read and what I've heard about it. I don't know the details on that. But when you give somebody a, you know, an incentive to classify something for whatever reason and take objectivity out of it, even if, you know, these are good moral people. You know, on a 50-50, they're always going to side with the incentive, you would think. And does that skew the numbers? I find that fascinating. There's a lot of things that don't seem to add up. I have, you know, as we talked about with Frank in the first half hour, speaking anecdotally, I have a lot of friends that, you know, tested positive, and then a couple of days later, they were told, oh, by the way, there was a mistake, that was a false positive, or they were tested positive, tested again, and were negative. And that really, you know, makes you wonder, are those still being counted as positives? If people get tested multiple times, are they double or triple positive? I get all that. The testing stuff I get, and I see the discrepancies in it. I tend to agree with the suspicion that's out there. But what I, you know, can't turn away from is this huge spike in hospitalizations, because when the cases were spiking, everyone was kind of saying, you know, hey, we're just testing more. It's cases spiking. You know, who cares? Blah, blah, blah. Tell me, are they asymptomatic? Are they actually sick? Are they being hospitalized? Are they actually dying? Are they dying from COVID? And those are good questions. But now I'm reading, okay, we saw the huge spike in cases and everyone was skeptical, but now we're seeing spikes in hospitalizations and deaths. And, you know, maybe some of those are flu related, like you said. You know, maybe that's possible. I'm not saying it's not. But that is alarming to me, even though I'm not personally scared as someone that's healthy and in my 30s and really the lowest possible risk out there. I'm not personally concerned, but I can understand why people are. I mean, can you at least sort of understand why a lot of people are concerned?
Well, I can understand why they are concerned, given the way if they're being pummeled with this kind of message nonstop, so that it's
right.
I mean, how much news time in any news cycle in just Chicago as an example? I mean, Channel 9 has news for what, 5 hours in the morning and another 6 hours the rest of the day. I would bet more than 50% of that stuff is related to the coronavirus, either in, you know, what's happening in terms of compliance with state mandates about the shutdown, or what's happening with the numbers or the testing results. So if people are watching TV news, as they tend to do, there's no way they can escape being terrified. And I just find that, you know, a horrible misuse of people's attention span.
Yeah.
Because you're not giving them any time to reflect on what really doesn't make sense about a lot of this. In a bad flu season, there would be lots of hospitalizations, and there would be a spike in fatalities and comorbidities. And if in other years we were probably much better or more concerned with tracking those things more carefully, now we just want to lump it all together and blame it on the disease du jour. And I'm just kind of over it. You know, I don't watch the news because I know I'm going to be told something that I have really stopped putting much confidence in anymore. And I also know that a lot of people don't see it the same way. I mean, they will sit there and listen to it and become ever more concerned, and I can see it in people's behavior. And I can't blame people for that, but I think they're totally deserved by the news industry and the medical industry to be terrified of something that they shouldn't be, or at least not as terrified as they're being told they should be.
Right, yeah. And as someone who has a degree in broadcasting and who in a previous life, you know, that was my sole livelihood. I worked for CBS Radio for many years, as a lot of you know, in downtown Chicago. And, you know, if it bleeds, it leads. Everyone's heard that. And there's no doubt that if cable news or local news has a story that incites fear in people or conspiracy in people or whatever, they're going to continue leading with that if it's driving ratings. And I get that. And there's no doubt in my mind that the main reason why every news broadcast opens, you know, breaking COVID, cases in Illinois, you know, 12,000 today, hospitalizations, 1,000, deaths, you know, 39, or whatever, in big red letters to scare everybody. There's no doubt that there's some truth to that. And it's very clear to me, media organizations, you know, have something to gain by doing that. I get that. What I don't understand, to sort of shift it a little bit, is what do government agencies have to gain by killing their economy if they don't truly believe that it's a real threat? Because no one right now, as it stands right now, in my opinion, and correct me if I'm wrong, listeners, you can tweet us at Stocks the Letter N Jocks. No one is going to reelect Lori Lightfoot based on how she's handled this locally. Certainly if you're a business owner, you've been completely decimated. So I don't think she has anything to gain with her, you know, coronavirus PSAs and her, you know, all the memes that are out there and the strict, you know, lockdowns compared to some other major cities. Yet they're doing it because they truly believe that it is a big concern. Well, am I missing something? What do they have to gain by doing this and killing the economy and killing the people that vote for them, if it's not a real concern?
Well, I think what they get is an ever more impoverished electorate, an electorate that is going to be more appreciative of the few scraps they get from the government to hang on to their, you know, survival and their livelihood. So if you can depress people's appetites for pleasure, for entertainment, for restaurants, for, you know, just making a night on the town and hanging out with people in a crowded bar or going to a sporting event or something and be elbow to elbow with people you never met before and have fun like we used to have. If you get people weaned away from that, you make them, you know, not only be satisfied with less, but it also kind of increases the power of political figures like a Governor Pritzker or Mayor Lightfoot, because you now are, you're hungry for the more basic things in life, like, can I go outside today and wear a mask and not have people stoning me for that? Once you ratchet it down to that level and you make people terrified of just being a free citizen, then you're going to be very grateful what little you are likely to get from a shrinking tax base or a city where crime is exploding and people are angry at everybody. You'll be more grateful and thankful to the people who make these little gifts to you possible. So I see it as just an attempt to ratchet down appetites, turn us into more of a third world country, make us less happy, and by consequence to make us happier for the little we do have, and be able to maybe even be satisfied with less than that as things become more and more locked down. So I see it as a gradual process. The politicians, I think, really do have a lot to gain from it. And it strikes me as something that's been systematized in a way where you get the same message across the board, you know, in blue states anyway compared to red states, and that can't be accidental. There's some kind of alignment here that is pushing this in a political way that also makes me highly suspicious of the message.
He's John Flanagan. My name is Matt Weber. We'll come back after a quick break with one more segment with John, and then at 7:30 Central Time, Mike Hart from Tasty Trade will join us to close out the show. I promise I won't bring up the Buffalo Bills losing on Hail Mary. Dow futures are up 482. That's 1.64%, but down a little bit from our last update. S&P futures are up 38.25. That's 1%. The NASDAQ has come back a little bit. It's down 8.5. That's 0.07%. Give us a follow on Twitter if you haven't already, at Stocks, the letter N, Jocks, that's Stocks, N, Jocks, and tweet us. We're getting a bunch of tweets here in the first hour. We'll kick off hour two next with John Flanagan after the break.
Are you one of the millions of people who suffer with pain? Do you wake up in the morning with stiffness in the lower back or neck? Why are you using medication to cover up the symptoms without treating the actual cause? Painkillers, muscle relaxants, and anti-inflammatories are not the answer. At ChiroMed, physicians are trained to detect the cause of your symptoms and to correct the underlying problem. If you're ready to listen to common sense and do what it takes to make changes in your body that can affect your health for the rest of your life, give ChiroMed a call and set up a complimentary consultation. They are located in Orland Park and can be reached at 708-403-2727. 20,000 patients over 22 years have been treated at ChiroMed, and over 90% of them have had positive results without medication or expensive surgery. Isn't it time you did something good for your body too? Give ChiroMed a call. 708-403-2727. That's 708-403-2727. Let's get you pain-free and living again.
Is your business being challenged by the complexities surrounding healthcare reform or other matters related to human resources management? If so, then Cognos HR can help. a longtime friend and contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio program, Cognos HR provides its clients with a perfect blend of strategic consulting and day-to-day HR management to drive overall improvement in business performance. Companies that join the Cognos HR family are better able to manage healthcare costs, enhance benefit offerings, and improve employee satisfaction by leveraging our access to Fortune 500 benefits. Our innovative onboarding and payroll technology, along with our constant attention to detail, enables us to provide the highest level of quality service to our clients. Now, your time and energy can be focused on generating business and increasing your bottom line. We'll take care of the rest. For more information, call us at 630-401-8810 or search us on the web at CognosHR.com. Cognos HR, innovation in human resources. Licensed in Illinois and Arizona.
This self-directed trading is a lonely job. Online trading is not as easy as point and click.
No, it's not. Everyone, even professionals, need to share ideas and think out loud every now and then.
That's what I like about PTI ProDirect. Their staff of former option floor traders really helps me choose the right strategy for trading option volatility and plan the time decay for my covered writing program.
Yep, nothing can replace years of trading experience to stop you from making that dumb trade and for saving a few bucks. We've all been there and done that.
Yeah, I have access to all that great trading advice and experience for just a penny a share for stocks, $1 for equity options, and $1 minimum a trade.
Our clients at PTI ProDirect can call when they need a little help on a trade or just to talk about the market in general. We trade every day. We love this stuff.
That's what I like most about PTI ProDirect. Cheap prices along with great advice from real floor traders. It's the best of both worlds.
Tell your friends. That's PTIProDirect.com. PTIProDirect.com.
Interested in promoting your business to a high-end audience comprised of entrepreneurs, traders, executives, and the everyday business person? Consider advertising on Stocks and Jocks. With a devout listenership covering the Chicago market, along with a vast online presence, advertising on Stocks and Jocks may be just what it takes to put your business over the top. For more information, contact me, Matt Weber, at matt@stocksandjocks.net. That's matt@stocksandjocks.net. Interested in promoting your business?
Hear ye, hear ye! The Homer Broadcasting System is on the air!
Stocks, Jocks,
Stocks and Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
You are out of control!
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
Something happening here. What it is.
All right, welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. My name is Matt Weber, filling in for the Chief today. We're hoping he's back tomorrow after a minor medical procedure this morning. I'm joined by John Flanagan here, as he was with us for the second half of the last hour, and then Mike Hart from Tasty Trade will call in at 7:30 Chicago time this morning to close out the show. We're with you until 8 o'clock this morning. You can follow us on Twitter, at Stocks, the letter N, Jocks. And we're getting all kinds of tweets. Natachi, one of our longtime listeners and friends of the show, says, "No, Maddie, it's not true." PolitiFact says, "Donald Trump's false claim that doctors inflate COVID-19 deaths to make more money." First of all, I didn't say that they inflate deaths to make more money. I said I believe what I read was that they get a 20% more for the care of Medicare patients with COVID-19. So they get some sort of bonus that I don't fully understand, but that it certainly is potentially could be read as an incentive to classify a COVID-19 positive person who dies as a COVID-19 death. I'm not saying that these are amoral people or immoral people, but if you incentivize someone to do something, I think in a 50-50 case, they're probably going to do it, good, bad, or indifferent. And that's what I said. And I do believe that is the case. That said, no, they do not make more money to inflate COVID-19 deaths. So thank you for that, for writing in. Kevin writes in, "Those who believe that America is an inherently unjust country can use draconian virus policies as a first step to redistributing wealth and power. They need a compliant society to accomplish their goals." I mean, yeah, that's what John said. I would like to think that that's not the case, but it's certainly a theory that's out there. John, welcome back. So we talked a lot about, you know, COVID in the first hour, and I think that is top of mind for a lot of people. I know in my family, it's a big deal. As I mentioned at the top of the show, we canceled Thanksgiving for the first time in my lifetime. Not only the, you know, the big Thanksgiving with the aunts and uncles and my grandmother, who turns 85 in May and who, you know, I've only seen her once in the last year because of all this. But even our, you know, immediate family Thanksgiving with my mom, and brother, that's canceled as well because my stepdad has a heart issue and, they don't feel comfortable having people come out. And I get it. That said, my wife's family is still having their Thanksgiving, just the small immediate family out in the suburbs. And so we'll be doing that. And I think, you know, this is a big topic that's facing a lot of people, you know, both on the anecdotal level, but also just, you know, on the national level, a big deal. If you're a business owner, certainly a restaurant or bar owner, you're really getting killed, you know, downtown Chicago and otherwise. But I did want to switch topics. You know, as we're looking at the markets this morning, you know, the S&P futures are up 38.75. They've been up all morning. Dow futures are up 487. They were up even higher than that a bit ago. NASDAQ is still down a little bit, down 13.50. But for the most part, the market keeps rallying, and we think it's, you know, higher probably because of the vaccine news and some other stuff. But you mentioned the election, and Frank mentioned it as well. He thinks that could be playing into the market rally. I don't know if that's true or not. But you mentioned, you know, if you sort of made a comment that I don't know if everyone caught, but it was essentially a comment that if Biden wins, which, you know, he's pretty much been declared the winner by all news organizations. It looks like he's going to win 306 electoral votes. He already has 290 that are confirmed. He's up in Georgia, I think, by about 14,000 votes. I know they're going to have a recount there, but that's a lot of votes to make up. But even if he loses it, it doesn't matter. But if he does hold on to win Georgia, that'd be 306 electoral votes, which coincidentally is the exact same that Trump won 4 years ago. Do you really believe that the election is still up in the air?
I do, Matt. And I think it's now become, you know, a case of Occam's razor, that the simplest explanation may be the best one, that, you know, the fact that crucial states at a certain point in the election counting process between November 3rd and 4th had huge margins in Trump's favor, vote counting was stopped, and upon resumption, the lead shifted dramatically to Biden. That normally does not happen, and it can only happen when there's been some kind of infusion of ballots that have not been filtering into the counting process with everything else equally. And there's some, I think, pretty compelling evidence in the type of voting equipment that was used here. The voting machines, you know, the Dominion-produced machines that are used in 28 states, including all of the ones where there are disputed results at this point, are easily hackable, and all it requires is apparently about 5 or 6 minutes of, you know, opening up the back of the machine and inserting a card, and you can be hacking it remotely. And, you know, there's evidence I was, you know, listening to over the weekend, various pundits talking about statistical similarities in how votes were shifted from Trump to Biden in some of these states that really indicate fairly coordinated fraud, I would say. And I know the media has been trumpeting the fact that there is no, you know, basis to any of these claims, but I'd have to differ with them, because there's pretty compelling evidence that the system has been breached in some way. And I think that the more likely outcome isn't that Biden's going to win some of these states, that these states will be flipped, but that these states' results are so corrupted that they can't be certified. This is kind of what Alan Dershowitz was saying over the weekend, and I'm not a Dershowitz fan, and seldom put much, you know, credence in what he says, because I think he's kind of a self-promoter, but there is some, you know, legs to what he's saying, that it will be impossible for these states to certify these results because there's so many questionable ballots in them. And then it is likely, you know, to result in Biden's being deprived of the 270 votes, electoral votes he needs to get past that hurdle. And it will probably go into the House of Representatives, and we're looking at a whole new Donnybrook then over the next 3 months or so. So, well, that's my take anyway.
Yeah, I will go on record as to say I don't think any of that will happen.
Aren't we lucky we live in a democracy, man?
Yes, and
I all opposing viewpoints.
That's right. That's right. We certainly can. I think for the good of the country, whether it was a Trump victory or a Biden victory or, you know, a Joe Jurgensen victory, for the good of the country, I hope it doesn't happen, because when we start questioning every single election from here on out, that's going to be an issue. A couple of things on that. One, I think we both know that the Democrats overwhelmingly voted via mail-in this year. In fact, 100 million plus people voted by mail-in ballot, including dozens of people that I know. And they were all the Democrats for whatever reason, partly because they are taking COVID more seriously, and just didn't want to deal with going to a polling place, potentially waiting in line, affecting other people. And so they voted early in record turnout. So when you talk about, you know, we've never seen this in an election before. Well, yeah, we've never seen this many people vote, you know, from a mail-in perspective before. And as we all know, for whatever reason, in a lot of these states, specifically Pennsylvania, they decided to count the mail-in votes last. And so that's how you see a margin get closed the way we did. I think that's a very logical explanation. Are you discounting that and you're saying that's not the case?
No, I'm saying that, you know, for example, in Georgia, it will be very difficult to do an accurate audit on mail-in ballots, because I don't think a lot of these envelopes that have signature requirements on them have survived. So there is no way that you can establish which mail-in votes are actually ones that were received in envelopes that had a signature on them. And if those ballots have to be thrown out, then I don't think there's any way that the race in Georgia can be called for maybe anybody at this point. There's an interesting piece in the Buffalo Chronicle today, which is, you know, a newspaper I don't follow, I don't know very much about, but it's this story without an author's name on it, and yet it's on the newspaper's website, that says a mob boss in Philadelphia paid millions of dollars to people to fill out ballots on election night with Biden's name only selected on it, and that these ballots were trucked to counting points in Philadelphia, and that he's trying to turn this into now a book contract for how he steered the election from Trump to Biden in Pennsylvania with all these fake ballots. And it's a startling story, and it's in a newspaper. It's not just on some crank website. So I suspect there's a lot of stuff we have yet to even imagine went on here. Clearly, you know, the Democrats were so hungry to get Trump out of there that they started this process before he was inaugurated. And nothing really stuck, but it was relentless. Everything possible to undermine the outcome in 2016, or to show how illegitimate it was, or how much foreign interference there was, it didn't really go anywhere, despite wasting the country's time ad nauseum trying to establish groundless cases here.
Well,
it wouldn't surprise me that they would invest maybe in the last year or so in equipment for elections that can be compromised, and they knew it was compromisable, and they had plans on just how to compromise it. If they had done this for the last 4 years, why would they stop at something like election fraud either? So I'm perfectly okay with assuming this happened. It doesn't strike me as any weirder or more outrageous than what we've already seen play out, you know, for the last almost 5 years in the media. So it doesn't maybe distress me as much as it should, because I've almost come to expect it, I think.
Well, I understand that sentiment, certainly, and I would say that as much of a waste of time as people questioning the 2016 election, and I didn't see it as much, but certainly with the Russian stuff and foreign interference, that was huge, and that was out there. And at the time, I thought that was a waste of time. And on the other side, I feel like all the questioning that I'm reading about, you know, in small factions of the population regarding this, I think is a waste of time too. And I think it will prove to be the same waste of time as the waste of time on the other side was in 2016. We'll certainly see how it all plays out. This idea that, you know, President Trump won't concede, you know, Hillary obviously did concede. I'm reading today, delays in the transition process from the current administration to President-elect Biden's administration could lead to substantial damage if President Donald Trump continues to refuse to concede, says David Adelman, a former U.S. ambassador. Putting politics aside, what all goes into this transition process? Is it that big of a deal if the Biden administration is delayed access? You know, you're a history buff. I mean, I assume, you know, there's a lot of work that goes into the 60 days to transition between a presidency. You know, what are your thoughts on that?
Well, there's been interesting examples in history of how the transition process has been used to stick it to a previous administration, so that they will be seen in history as being even less effective than the electorate thought they were. And the example I think of is the 1932 election when you know, things had really reached a horrendous depth of despair in this country, and FDR, you know, was convincingly elected in November of 32. And back then, the inauguration day was in March, so it was an even longer transition period. And from what I've read, and Arthur Schlesinger's books on this subject make it pretty clear that Hoover, he was now no longer going to be president after March 4th of 33, was kind of reaching out to FDR to, you know, make things as better in what they knew was going to be a worsening situation. And instead, FDR refused really to cooperate or to listen to him or to even meet with them or talk about this stuff, with the idea of worsening the country's financial situation as a way of now making FDR an even more compelling savior. So that, you know, by the time FDR got inaugurated, you know, he immediately declared a bank holiday and shut the banks down, and the banks were already failing so fast that they would have all probably closed on their own. But things had reached an absolutely desperate point by then, and that was by apparently design, that this was Roosevelt's way of making sure Hoover would be remembered as the person who made this pain, you know, that you all remember so terribly well, but it was worsened by what FDR refused to do in the transition process. So, you know, there are horrible motives, I think, you know, given what's going on elsewhere and what you want to cover up or what you want to accentuate, and how you want to be seen and how you want your predecessor to be seen. So there's lots of opportunities to tweak this from just a public relations standpoint, and it's not a pretty picture, I guess. So there has been kind of a record, you know, a recent record of not much collegiality. So the 2016 transition period doesn't look good for Biden or Obama, given what was going on in the closing weeks of their administration and how they really did everything possible to sabotage Trump and his entire organization from the get-go. So I wouldn't like that not to be repeated. But I must say that it would be, you know, it would fall on deaf ears to me if all of a sudden Biden and Harris are complaining that there isn't more cooperation because they had very little to offer themselves back when it could have been offered to Trump. So we're in a cycle now where it's, you know, neither side has any trust in the other, pretty much.
Well, that's clear, and I'm more wondering, you know, putting the politics aside, I'm wondering what are the benefits of this transition? Is it something that's really important to have all the different, you know, sort of organizations brief each other and so there's a process for continuing things that are working and reviewing things that are not working? Is it important, or is it just something that's not that big of a deal and who really cares?
Well, it probably isn't that important after, you know, let's assume that the Trump presidency is a one-term presidency for now. There's so much entrenched in Washington that doesn't change from administration to administration that it isn't that difficult to get things rolling in, you know, it's in any of the cabinet positions. I mean, there's enough staff, there's enough holdovers from previous terms. People have hung on to their jobs despite whatever political winds were blowing. It's not difficult to get things up and running pretty fast. What's contentious is in appointments, you know, in cabinet officials and the people who are put forward to run these places, and that can be long and drawn out and acrimonious. But I think the actual, you know, operations, I think, tend to operate pretty smoothly unless there's, you know, real sabotage going on, which I don't think is, you know, going to happen. I hope it doesn't happen.
Yeah.
But it has happened in the past. I mean, it's reputed to have happened.
Yeah, I would agree.
Computer failures and telephone systems crashing and all sorts of things just to mess with people. So I can't rule that out, but I suspect overall it isn't that hard to do a transition if everybody is willing to, you know, get up and leave at the appointed time and everybody's ready to assume their jobs on day one. It isn't that hard. Shouldn't be that hard.
Yeah, Kevin writes in on Twitter, and you can follow us on Twitter at Stocks, the letter N, Jocks, and we're getting tons of tweets this morning, which is great, and I know I haven't read that many of them, but I appreciate that. Keep them coming. He says, I don't understand why so many want Trump to concede. If he has the goods on fraud, that will change results. We should know it. If he can't provide the goods, his supporters will be more likely to accept the results. I tend to agree with that. I think, you know, if there really was all kinds of fraud to the point where it's going to flip the election, even though I think that's ridiculous and not going to be the case, but if it does happen and he does have proof, first of all, if he did have proof, he would come out with it. But second of all, if it does happen, then we should absolutely wait and change the results. I agree. But that said, I think more people are more concerned, not necessarily about, you know, I concede, because who really cares? I think people are concerned about a peaceful transition of power, which we've had, you know, every 4 years or 8 years for the history of this country, as far as I'm concerned, and are worried that that's not going to take place, with this presidency as recently as yesterday, you know, still tweeting out, "We will win," and stuff like that. You know, are you concerned with a peaceful transition of power, John? Or let's say it turns out that he does not have the goods on fraud. Okay. And they do a recount and everything seems on the up and up and, you know, people are unhappy, but whatever. He loses. It's clear. There's no proof. You know, are you concerned with a peaceful transfer of power, or do you think the president will ultimately, you know, leave?
I'm not concerned that there won't be a peaceful transfer of power. I mean, it may be a case that Trump, like Stacey Abrams in Georgia, never concedes, but he will leave. I have no doubt. Trump is not the kind of person who's going to try to stay in there by putting himself in a bunker and surrounding himself with the Army or the Secret Service and expecting that to go down. It's not going to happen. And I know people have said and speculated that that's, you know, a reason why we can't have Trump, because he won't leave otherwise unless we vote him out. And unfortunately, that tends to feed the fuel, you know, for the fact that there was fraud. Let's get him out in any way possible, even if it means stuffing the ballot boxes. So I don't foresee any kind of, you know, uneasy transfer of power should none of this get resolved in Trump's favor. But I do think that the long-term effect of a discredited election is pretty much, you know, you can't salvage that. You can't make people trust an electoral system where they feel like everything was aligned to twist, you know, a result away from reality. And there have been suspicions of that in the past, and contested elections, and certainly dirty elections, even going back into the 19th century, of highly politicized, you know, electoral counting, you know, long after the election. So we're not strangers to this, but I think now with electronic voting and mail-in voting being what it is, if people don't trust the system, you have a checked out electorate the next time around and an ever decreasing faith in the elections, which I would think Democrats don't want either. But this is what they're playing with. They should be just as interested as the Republicans in having election results that everybody can swallow. And the Democrats are doing everything possible now to make it look like we got the result we wanted. Let's conclude the process and move on to something else. That doesn't work for a lot of Trump supporters. It doesn't work for me. So they have to be careful that if they're going to, like, twist the system this way, that it's not going to come back and bite them sometime down the road. And we'll be looking at a debased process, a much less reliable election process, or maybe eventually no elections at all if we keep it up. So the stakes are really high that this be made to look as credible and as carefully done as possible. And if all these results can't be certified, then it goes to the House of Representatives. This is not unprecedented in this country. And there's a way around this if none of these states have enough clean ballots to make it clear what, you know, direction it went in. So there's a way out of this. It isn't like this has never been addressed before. It's made for some angry partisan politics in the aftermath, but it has worked. So I suspect it will work if we ever get to that point this time, too.
Yeah. Well, we're getting some tweets, by the way, saying the Buffalo Chronicle is not a newspaper. We may want to check the source there. But
I just saw it, and yeah. I couldn't, you know, verify much.
You even said you couldn't.
It looks like maybe like the Chicago Reader, for all I know.
Yeah, you even said you couldn't verify it. That's fine.
It doesn't have an author's name on it, but it has lots of quote material, and it doesn't sound like The Onion. So, it's one of these things where until further proof is provided, you can't really depend on it.
Right.
But it is out there.
So. And you did state that. That's fine. So, in closing here, and we have a few minutes left, but I would say this, and I'd really like people to think about this and be honest with themselves about this. Don't you think that if Democrats were behind some sort of, you know, scheme that was going to flip ballots against Republicans, that they would have done it across the board. And what I mean by that is Republicans gained seats in the House. The Senate did not flip as many people thought it would. The way I look at it, it was just a referendum on getting Trump out of there, because a lot of people on the left, a lot of people in the middle, and even some people on the right just don't like the guy. Good, bad, or indifferent, they just don't like him. They want him out of there. They want a clean start at the top. But if it was truly some sort of, you know, widespread nefarious scheme to actually flip votes, I would think that they would say, hey, we should try to take over the Senate and the House too, or you know, hold on to a bigger lead in the House too. Instead, I looked at it as a lot of American voters didn't really have a problem with Republican policy. In fact, I think a lot of American voters embraced Republican policy. They probably don't like the overbearing shutdowns on business. They probably don't want, you know, taxes to go up. A lot of people don't like Obamacare. And I think, there's a lot of positive sentiment out there, I think, for Republican policy, but they just didn't like Trump. And I think if there was widespread fraud out there that the Democrats were leading or were behind, that they would have, it would be more apparent in a complete blue wave shift, which we did not see. There was not a blue wave. I mean, I think that's clear. So, to me, just trying to be as logical as possible and trying to be as objective as possible, to me, that just completely debunks that whole theory, and it just says that people just didn't like Trump because he's an asshole. It's as simple as that. And well, they said, you know what, I can deal with Republican policy. I'll put in Biden because he's sort of a centrist anyway, and he's going to put Republicans in the cabinet, and even though he's got Kamala as vice president, she's not going to tell him what to do as long as he stays healthy, which that's a concern too. And, you know, we'll deal with it in four more years. What do you say to that?
It's possible, but I also think it's much harder to, you know, have a coordinated response in more than the crucial states that are going to determine the election to get the result you wanted. So I think it's a lot easier to say, well, in Michigan and Pennsylvania and Georgia, let's, you know, put all our eggs in those baskets. And Biden was kind of saying as much, really. The Pennsylvania is what's going to do it for us. Well, maybe he knew something that, you know, he wasn't fully open about. But it would be a lot easier to do that and try to get away with it than, for example, in Texas, which rejected the Dominion voting system, which unfortunately Illinois uses. But certainly none of the polls that the Biden, you know, camp or the DNC was promoting leading up to this show anything close to what was going on here, which makes me think that the desire for fraud here was a way to kind of, you know, sneak this in, because it would help to confirm what they had been saying all along, that it was a 15-point lead by Biden, 20-point lead, you know, ridiculous overstatements. But I think they probably planned in the event that there would be certain states they would be able to capture, and it would be enough to put them over the top in the Electoral College, and that's pretty much all they cared about. And they weren't so much worried about the elections down the road, I suspect. It's pretty hard to coordinate all of that, I think, and especially something as confused and inept as the DNC. But when it came to, you know, party bosses in Detroit or Pittsburgh or Philadelphia, or, you know, big city machines sticking their toes in, that isn't difficult at all, and it's probably always happened to some extent anyway, so that's not an unusual phenomenon. But it got the result they wanted, and it raised as few, you know, eyebrows elsewhere as they needed to. So I think it's kind of, you know, a way of doing it on the down low, so that you don't draw unnecessary attention to the fact that this was clearly a national affront to the electoral process.
Well, John, it's
confined it to particular places.
We got a dash. It's been a lot of fun talking for the last hour. I appreciate it.
Well, give my best to Chief, and keep up the great work, man. You did a wonderful job. I look forward to calling in and listening to all your wonderful guests every week. So, and re-listening to it during the week. So.
Well, thank you. Let me leave you with two quick questions, and I forgot to ask Frank one of these questions. So, Frank, if you're listening, you have to write in or text in. Two quick questions. One, if when the vaccine becomes available, will you take it? And two, who wins tonight, Bears Vikings? You got 30 seconds.
I will not get the vaccine. It's not that I'm opposed to vaccines, you know, generally, but this one I'm not interested in. And I think the Bears will squeak by.
All right, I like it. He's John Flanagan. I'm Matt Weber. We'll take a quick break with some sports weather traffic on the other side. And then we'll come back with Mike Hart from Tasty Trade, our markets expert. Mike, you know, forgive me for not being a markets expert. I will lean heavily on you. And then I'd like to get your thoughts on some of the stuff we've talked about over the last 90 minutes. If you want to write in, you can follow us on Twitter at Stocks Letter N Jocks and shoot us a tweet. We'll be right back.
How much confidence do you have that your investments will make you wealthy? Do you truly know the odds? Welcome to Luckbox, the control freak's guide to life, money, and probability. Luckbox shows you how to gauge the likelihood of success before you commit to an investment or any other decision. And Luckbox is free for 1 year at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Each new issue dives deep into the current investing climate, separates the signal from the noise with relevant trade ideas, and equips you with cutting-edge tactics you don't already know. Luckbox is the essential magazine for proactive investors who are hell-bent on pursuing life, luxury, and happiness through sports, fitness, travel, food, spirits, music, and a whole lot more. Smart investors don't bet on possibilities, they play the probabilities. Luckbox is $7.99 on newsstands, but you can subscribe for 10 free digital issues at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Don't rely on luck. Get Luckbox at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks.
Hello, this is Tom Harrell, the Chief. Confused about investing these days? I suspect you are not alone. Investing was never easy, although at times it may have seemed so. I think one reason behind the current concern, although maybe not explained as such, is how the fluctuation in the American dollar and the associated politics is affecting your investments and your wealth. It may not be enough to make some money in your investments. You may need now to make enough to exceed the amount that your leadership is depreciating the value of the dollars you've worked your whole life to accumulate. That same leadership has seen fit to maneuver risk-free interest rates to near zero. Providing positive risk-averse returns in a zero-interest and declining real wealth environment is by far the toughest assignment I've ever had in my years as a money manager. I'm sure that a lot of you have heard that one way to possibly deal with this problem is to invest in so-called hard currencies like silver and gold, the idea being that they will retain their relative value in the face of devaluation of paper currencies like the dollar. To be honest, I have never been a gold bug. I've always had faith that having enough dollars and a good investment strategy was good enough. Now I'm not so sure. But I do know that if I did invest in gold or silver, I'd want to do it in the same manner as we do with PTI for investments in the market, with defined risk. If you feel the need to invest in gold or silver, we can do it using the same strategies that we use for our protected index program. No matter what you invest in, we feel that you need to know and control your risk. Find us at PTISecurities.com. That's PTISecurities.com.
Are you one of the millions of people who suffer with pain? Do you wake up in the morning with stiffness in the lower back or neck? Why are you using medication to cover up the symptoms without treating the actual cause? Painkillers, muscle relaxants, and anti-inflammatories are not the answer. At ChiroMed, physicians are trained to detect the cause of your symptoms and to correct the underlying problem. If you're ready to listen to common sense and do what it takes to make changes in your body that can affect your health for the rest of your life, give ChiroMed a call and set up a complimentary consultation. They are located in Orland Park and can be reached at 708-403-2727. 20,000 patients over 22 years have been treated at ChiroMed, and over 90% of them have had positive results without medication or expensive surgery. Isn't it time you did something good for your body too? Give ChiroMed a call. 708-403-2727. That's 708-403-2727. Let's get you pain-free and living again.
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now. Right here, right now.
All right, welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. My name is Matt Weber. We'll come back here in just a second with Mike Hart of Tasty Trade. Always good to have Mike on Mondays. S&P futures are up 36. That's 1%. Dow futures are up 495. That's 1.68%. NASDAQ futures are down just under 34. So they're down. Everything else is in the green this morning. We'll take a quick look at traffic in the Chicagoland area, and frankly, it's been very quiet. We saw traffic kind of picking up over the last several weeks, and this past week with the spike in COVID, I think that probably has a lot to do with it. Traffic is back down again to what it was back in the May and April time frame. No issues at all on the Edens or Kennedy. Eisenhower, Stevenson looking good. Southside expressways have been quiet all morning. Only issues we have are up on the North Shore. Looks like Half Day Road, which is Route 22. At Skokie Highway, there is a crash. And then just north of there, Route 41 on the northbound side at Townline Road, there is an accident.
And then northeast of there, it looks like Cedar Lake Road between Rollins Road and Gulfview Drive is closed due to a crash. Cedar Lake is blocked in both directions south of Rollins due to an accident that happened in the last hour or so. So those are some issues up in the northern suburbs, but everything else is quiet out there. Weather today, it's going to look very nice from out your window until you step outside and you realize that it's 25, 30 mile per hour wind gusts. We will reach a high of 50 degrees with some sunshine, but it'll feel much colder than that with the wind chill. Right now it is crystal clear and 34 degrees downtown, going up to a high of 50. For our Phoenix listeners, sunshine with a high of 89 today. Right now it's clear and 53. In sports, the 5-4 Bears will take on the 3-5 Minnesota Vikings tonight at Soldier Field. The Vikings are 3.5-point favorites on the road, in spite of the Bears having a better record and being at home. But both teams are trending in opposite directions of late. Bears are playing not very good football. Vikings, on the other hand, look really good and are really running the ball behind Dalvin Cook and that offensive line. So if the Bears can stop the run, I do think they'll keep the game close. And if that line can go up to 4 or 4.5, I would absolutely take the Bears. I'm still considering taking the Bears at 3.5 here, but still looking at that one. In NFL action, the Cardinals beat the Bills yesterday on a Hail Mary. I almost didn't mention it because Mike Hart's on hold. But Bills scored late with 34 seconds left. A great pass from Josh Allen to Stephon Diggs to take the lead. Looked like the game was over, but Kyler Murray still had 34 seconds left. Drove down the field and then connected with DeAndre Hopkins with a Hail Mary. 2 seconds left to go up 32-30. Unfortunately, for some people we know, me and Colin, our Friday contributor, had the Cardinals -2.5, and they didn't kick the extra point. They took a knee, didn't want to risk the kick getting blocked, and only won by 2, so they won but did not cover. Cardinals are now 6-3. Bills dropped to 7-3. Sunday Night Football, Patriots upset the Ravens 23-17. And lastly, Dustin Johnson won his first Masters. The number one player in the world broke a course record, shooting 20 under, breaking Tiger's record by 2 strokes. Tiger, of course, won with an 18 under back in 1997. All right, so let's welcome in Mike Hart. He is from Tasty Trade, and he is our markets guru who joins us every Monday morning. Mike, good morning. How are you?
Matt, I'm doing great. How are you doing?
I'm doing well. I appreciate you jumping on. I don't know if you had a chance to listen to any of the first parts of the show, but we talked a lot about COVID-19, and we talked a lot about the presidential election results and different government policies. But we haven't talked a lot of markets. And, you know, frankly, as you know, I'm not a markets expert, but that's why we have you on. And, you know, obviously the markets are skyrocketing again this morning, at least in the S&P and Dow futures. NASDAQ is down a little bit. But I would ask you a couple of things. You know, one, you know, is this still sort of in the green because of the vaccine news that we've been hearing about over the last week, and then some more vaccine news this morning, or is there some other sort of driver that I'm missing?
No, I think you hit the nail on the head there. The market seems to be reacting to what we might expect once we pick the president. And once we cured, not cured, but once we found a vaccine that's promising, I think we are seeing that market reaction. But the one thing I will say is that this is when, if you are a contrarian, and I happen to be a contrarian market trader, and what that means is when things look bright and rosy, that's when I tend to get cautious. And when things are in the gutter and going down, I tend to get a little more aggressive in my trading. So it's sort of opposite of the norm, but, you know, you say, well, we've got a president, we have this COVID vaccine, what could possibly go wrong between now and April? And it seems like there's still a lot. And I'll also add this, Matt, so there's an index that Chief and I talk about quite a bit. You probably know what it is just listening to our conversations. But the VIX, V-I-X, that's going to give you a gauge of where the market stands right now in the sense of how much volatility is out there. And what we're seeing right now is a VIX level at 23, called 23.25. And what does that mean? Well, historically, if we go back to 1990, we tested every level that the VIX was at, which we're able to do. We have a pretty advanced research system. And we went back, we tested everything. We found the mean to be 15.5 over that time frame. So we're 8 points above. We're back to the lows that we saw in July. So volatility is getting taken out of this market, but it's by no means low volatility. There is still a lot of fear in this market, and we're seeing that through the lens of the VIX.
So that makes sense to me, and that sort of aligns with what I'm seeing, because I don't know if you're aware of this stat, but we've had negative year-over-year earnings in 6 of the last 7 quarters. Yet, you know, the markets are still skyrocketing and near all-time highs, you know, history of market highs. And that just doesn't align with what we're seeing. And then you talk about sort of the dichotomy between, you know, Wall Street just rallying like crazy, as it has been, yet businesses are going out of business in our neighborhoods, you know, small businesses that don't trade are going out of business left and right, and more shutdowns are taking effect. State of Washington just issued more shutdown orders this morning. Certainly we're well aware of what's going on in Illinois and Chicago and across the country. And that just doesn't sort of align with what we're seeing in the markets.
No, it doesn't. I read a study this weekend. It was by a reputable source, but they said you could see as much as 85% of the hospitality industry literally go under if this continues. And I don't think it needs to continue much longer before you start seeing the people who've been holding on for dear life, they've got to start falling at some point, unfortunately. So I think the one hope is that this vaccine is going to be our savior, but let's remember, like, 90% is still only 90%. When you look at the Bills game last night, I got to ask you this, Matt. What are the probabilities that you have 34 seconds left and you actually throw a Hail Mary and it connects? I mean, how many times a season do you see something like that?
Honestly, you see that once, maybe twice a season. That's it. If you know, you have 32 teams, you know, each playing 16 games, you know, you can do the math. You have a lot of close games and you just never see it. That was something. I did, full disclosure, bet the Cardinals -2.5. And so once the Bills took the lead, I was actually hoping that the Bills would win because I didn't want the Cardinals to be rewarded by winning when they weren't going to cover. And sure enough, the Cardinals get the Hail Mary, and with 2 seconds left, they take a knee and don't kick the extra point, and they don't cover.
That's amazing.
super low probability. I do think, though, that the Bills traveling across the country, going to Phoenix, that had let down written all over it, and to their credit, they did not let down at all. Their offense looked great. They moved the ball. The defense struggled, but Arizona's really tough to stop when you have Murray, who can scramble better than any quarterback in the NFL.
Yeah.
And he's going to win an MVP soon. It might even be this year soon. That's how good that kid is. Mike Hart joining us here on Stocks and Jocks. You can tweet us Stocks, the letter N, Jocks. 85% of hospitality to go under. That aligns, you know, completely with what I'm seeing. My brother has been a chef for a long time at high-end restaurants here in Chicago. High-end restaurants do not succeed well with takeout and carryout. It just doesn't, you know, pizza right. Places seem to be doing fine. You know, Chinese places seem to be doing fine because a big portion of their business is delivery and carryout anyway. The high-end places are just completely decimated, and he's been out of work, and so I'm seeing that. How long does it take before the markets catch up to what we're seeing in the real world?
To be honest, I don't think anyone knows. This is so detached from anything that we can. Typically, when we have extreme movement in the VIX, we're able to look back in time a little bit and say, okay, well, here's what happened in 2008. Here's what happened in 2012. Here's what happened in 2018. We're able to look at periods of movement. And, you know, maybe our sample size isn't that large when we're looking at the really, really large movements, but at least we have something to compare to. This really doesn't have any comparison. I don't think, you know, the market's ever been looking at this kind of a shutdown, this kind of a transfer of wealth, and where that wealth is going to go, I don't think it's been established. I don't think they figured out how to do business yet with this social distancing. And social distancing, I've been saying from the beginning, is the problem. The fact that you can't be closer than 6 feet apart makes it really hard for human society to operate and go out to dinner and, you know, go to ball games. So, what I can say, you know, looking at the market, the NASDAQ has done extremely well for a while. It outperformed everything during this slowdown. And it does not appear, it doesn't have any cues for an economic slowdown right now. All of the cues are pointing to an up market, you know, New Year's with an up market. All the stars are in line, and that's when I get nervous. That's when I start saying, you know what, I don't want to be with the crowd here. I want to be on the other side.
I know that traders don't like when guys like me compare sports betting to trading, even though if you actually looked at it, they're the exact same thing. But
I love the analogy. I think it's a fantastic one.
Yeah, I feel the same way when you see the public overwhelmingly on one side in a game. Like, for example, last night, the Patriots-Ravens game. The Patriots have been dreadful all year. They're without, you know, a ton of guys on offense. They have no skill position left. Cam Newton hasn't been very good. They can't run the ball, you know, et cetera. All these factors. Then there's bad weather. There's wind. There's rain. It's cold. And you have the Ravens coming in who are 6-2. All they do is run the ball. They have a quarterback that can run. And all of the public was pounding the Ravens. They're going to blow out the Patriots. They're going to win by 4 or 5 touchdowns. And it pointed me to, I ultimately just stayed away from the game. I didn't put a bet on either side. But when I see overwhelming public support on one side, like you're talking about, overwhelming, public support for the markets to continue to go up, I ultimately become cautious, you know, immediately. And usually I'll pull the trigger on the other side, or I'll at least just completely sit out. It sounds like that's actually pretty consistent with what you're talking about. But you did say all cues point to, you know, for the foreseeable future, things sort of, you know, remaining business as usual and continuing to go up. How does that pertain to retail sales heading into the holiday season with, Black Friday, Cyber Monday coming up, obviously, Christmas and Jewish holidays and New Year's and all that stuff? Do you see, those places being impacted since people can't go in person, or is everyone so used to online shopping now that it doesn't really matter?
No, I think absolutely there's been a shift in spending habits of the American people, and I think you're not going to see anything traditional about this traditional time of year. It's starting with Thanksgiving, and we all know we're at no place yet to have a Thanksgiving like a normal Thanksgiving would be. The question is, you know, what do things look like around Christmas time? Well, the thought is it's going to be just as bad or worse around Christmas. We have a few more months in this thing before there's any sign of relief. And, as far as retail sales, this is a really important number. I mean, the market really follows retail sales around this time of year. And I don't think you're going to see numbers that are remarkable. I think they're going to be unremarkable numbers. I think there's going to be less of that traditional spending. And, of course, all of the stores, all of the brick-and-mortar places, you wonder how we're making it hang on to.
So what would I know you're not on here necessarily to give advice, but just at a high level, what would you say to the average, you know, retail investor, you know, guys like me, guys like a lot of our contributors and listeners to the show, have the 401k, have the IRA, maybe have some mutual funds, whatever, some investments, would you tell people to start pulling, you know, something off the table and going to cash in certain areas, or is the markets just going to continue to run up like they have for essentially 12 straight years? I mean, I know no one knows for sure, but like, what does your gut tell you?
Well, what it tells me is, first of all, I would go into option strategy in order to manipulate the risk in my portfolio. So to do this, what I would start with is by selling a call. And when you sell a call, think of it like this, Matt. The stock is trading at $100. You can, say, sell a call at $110 for $2. So now you've just lowered your effective price of owning that stock by $2 because you sold it for $2. Now, people are going to get worried about the risk associated with this. It's a $300-and-some-odd stock. You're going to have to flip a lot of money to do this. What you can do is you can define that risk by selling the 110 call and buying, say, the 100 and buying. That's the difference, buying the 120 call. So you just created a call spread, and we would say it's $10 wide. Difference between 110 and 120, so right. It's a $10 wide spread. That means the total risk that is in that position is $1,000 minus the amount that you sold it for. Of course, you come to $800 of potential losses, and that's how much you would have to put on the trade. The nice thing about doing these kind of trades, they're high probability. For the most part, anytime we pick direction, it's going to be a 50-50 chance.
Right.
But when you sell an option, depending on where you sell that option, you can say, I have an 83% chance of winning. Based on statistics, this has an 83% chance of winning. And once you start realizing the way you can manipulate the portfolio through what we would call delta adjustments, and don't get hung up on the terminology, just try and see it from the big picture. By changing the deltas, if you just have stock, you have 100 deltas. But you could say sell 20 deltas, and now you have 80 deltas for that stock. And basically what it means is when the market goes up a dollar or down a dollar, your risk went from $100 to the upside to $100 to the downside to $80 to the upside. And $80 to the downside. So that's the way that I would adjust for it.
I like that, and I hope everyone, you know, took notes on that. That's a really good breakdown for the layman, and we appreciate that, Mike. And by the way, you can follow Mike on Twitter at MikeHart79. He's at Tasty Trade. You also contribute to Luckbox Magazine a little bit every once in a while, don't you?
Every month, I do a handout. It's actually a pullout in the magazine. So you can use it as a cheat sheet. A lot of people have been using the past episodes as cheat sheets, keep by their computer. My intention is to make sort of a series, but it's also a random walk through the brain of Michael Hart. And, you know, so it doesn't follow the book. It's kind of what's on my mind that month. So this month we're coming out an excellent piece. Tooting my own horn, but I did it on something called market awareness. And market awareness is that thing that traders have that helps them form an assumption. Are you getting long or are you getting short? And it's a collection of knowledge, really. It's a collection of the cumulative knowledge that you've created for yourself to determine the amount of risk, the direction, the way you're going to trade, and these are all personal choices. So I provide a six-step process to basically show how you can improve these skills. So it should be a fun article. I hope people enjoy reading it.
Absolutely, and you can pick those up at newsstands, but you can also get a free digital subscription. I'm sure you've heard the commercial, but luckboxmagazine.com/jocks, you can get a free digital subscription. And for my money, honestly, I'll say this honestly, Luckbox Magazine is pretty unique piece of literature that comes out every month right now, and I would recommend everyone checking it out because it really delves into the numbers, not only pertaining to the markets, but just in general. They had great stuff on the election and polling and the betting markets pertaining to, you know, the election. They have good politics stuff, good news of the day stuff. They've had really good stuff on China over the last few months. So I would recommend everyone go out there and check that out. So, Mike, we only have you for a couple more minutes. Real quick, you know, regarding this you know, Trump concession and or, you know, this peaceful transfer of power. Do you find it weird that the markets don't seem to care at all that he's publicly still stating that, you know, he's going to win and he will not concede, and then meanwhile the Biden-Harris ticket is already beginning to fill out their cabinet and things like that, and we've never really seen this, at least in my knowledge, at all, ever?
I agree. We haven't. But the one thing is about the market, it's the great equalizer. It's kind of like sports betting. When you say, well, that doesn't make any sense. How's it a 14-point spread?
Right.
It's the collective thought of millions of people for the market. And it's the collective nature of it that basically prices in everything. So we go with the assumption, and this is an assumption. It's how you view the market. It's a lot easier if you view it from an efficient market standpoint, meaning prices are correct. And if prices are correct, then it's already taken into account that Biden won the election. And it's not reacting to that news because you can say in hindsight, you can say because the market had already priced in a Biden win, hence no movement.
That makes a lot of sense. Mike, we got about 20 seconds left. Two quick questions that I've asked all the guests. One, when a vaccine comes out, will you take it? And two, who wins tonight, Bears Vikings?
Oh, that's a good question. I probably will not take the initial vaccine when it comes out. I'm going to wait and see. I know I'm one of those guys. And tonight, I'm going with the Vikings, actually. I know for this area that might upset some people, but I'm going for the Vikings.
No, I think that's right. I think that's certainly quite all right, and they're favored tonight by 3.5. Mike, it was fun, man. Thanks for calling in. We appreciate it. We've really enjoyed having you on every Monday to talk markets and talk VIX and talk volatility, and it's been really good stuff. So thanks for that. I appreciate it. We'll let you go. With that, the 2 hours flew by. So thanks to everyone for tweeting in and playing along. Thank you to Frank Fahey, John Flanagan, and Mike Hart. My name is Matt Weber. We'll be back tomorrow on Stocks and Jocks, 6 a.m. Central Time. Talk to you then.
Hey, guys.
What's up, G?
Want to go to Tchotchke's, get some coffee?
Oh, it's a little early.
I got to get out of here. I think I'm going to lose it.
Uh-oh. Sounds like somebody's got a case of the Mondays.
Stocks and Jocks is brought to you by PTI Securities and Futures. Go to ptisecurities.com. PTI Pro Direct. Trade for as low as a penny per share and a dollar per option contract. Learn more at ptiprodirect.com. Nadex. Offering an intuitive way to trade the financial markets. Visit nadex.com. Home Source Realty. Call Audrey Johnson at 708-349-3456. Hamzy Analytics. Listen to Fari Hamzy every other Thursday and visit hamzyanalytics.com. ChiroMed. Back or neck pain? Schedule a complimentary consultation by calling 708-403-2727. Dax Research. Tune in for David Andelman's technical analysis on Mondays and Thursdays and call 1-800-821-4968.